episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me, and joining us for the first time is Allman & Company CEO, Mr. Mark Miles. Mark, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Good to talk with you all.
Thank you very much for joining us. I know there's no races for the next couple of weeks, but I imagine it's busy for you. So we'll dive right into the questions here. I'll start. So TV ratings are slowly coming up, especially after Long Beach, they were improved. Do you think NBC, you know, has kind of delivered on their end of the partnership so far? And how has the feedback been on NBC Gold so far?
Yeah, good questions and an important one. So overall, in terms of audience, I think they're doing better than kind of slightly.
Okay.
The data I have is that when you compare the first four cable races or NBCSN last year to the first four races, which are cable races this year, we're up about 20%, 21% is the number I saw today in total audience. So, you know, it gets confusing because you initially get reports that are overnights and then they get sorted for the final rating data that people work by. But we're really pleased with that. And I think it's indicative of the work they've done. We're delighted with their effort. We think their team, you know, they're on the air team is outstanding. We get a lot of feedback from fans. Frankly, we did before we made the deal, that fans like the NBC team, and it's only been enhanced. And their production people are first rate and all over it. One of the things I really like is they care deeply about their biggest events. You know, their mantra is kind of NBC is the network that makes big events bigger. And so the 500 for them is really, really important. But they get that they have an equal opportunity and responsibility to cover the whole of the IndyCar series so that it all builds on each other, you know, from week to week. And I just think they're doing that. So you never know what the result's going to be, how long it'll take to add to the audience, but it's happening. And as you said, now it's time to start looking to May. And, you know, there are meetings, phone calls with them every day, whether they're production people, marketing people, communications people, talking about how to grow it. And there's going to be some more exciting evidence of that, I think, as we get closer to May into the 500.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad to hear that those numbers in there. And yeah, the TV rating system is definitely a little confusing. I will turn it over to Jess.
Hey, Mark, just want to say thank you again for giving us some time here. I like to ask kind of what we like to call the color questions. So I have kind of an infamous one that I'll start with just for fun. And then I'll switch to some more racing related.
Your favorite color is blue.
No, I'm not. But that's good to know. No, mine's. This is going to be even more bizarre. It's. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you've never been asked this question before.
All right, let's go for it.
Okay, so if I were to give you a 400-pound block of cheddar cheese, what would you do with it?
Well, right now I'm on the wagon, so my cocktail hour cheese consumption is down over normal. 400, you're right. Never had that question before. I think it would have to be some form of cut it all up and having a party. And,
perfect.
You know, you can't make a whole party out of cheese, but with cocktails and wine, I think we could have, I don't know, maybe all of the IndyCar Nation share a cocktail hour and have a really good time.
Heck yes. IndyCar Nation cocktail hour sounds fantastic.
I think I'm
going
to have to bring back up my cheese party with Team Pit Lane t-shirt that's somewhere in my closet.
Yep.
Yeah. You got that. I'm in. You know, just by May, I'm ready.
Perfect. All right. Go ahead, Matt.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us tonight and taking the time to talk with us. Switch back to racing here. You were someone in 2018 who was very passionate and spent a lot of time talking about McLaren and how they were going to be involved in the series in 2019. A couple of times he said there was a potential for them being full-time, but it wasn't guaranteed. And so this year it looks like an Indy 500 only program for them. But what, as far as what do you know about McLaren and any potential for them being full-time in 2020?
I know that it's something that Zach Brown, their board, and their team continue to work on. I think that's their ambition. I think they've said that. Right now, obviously, they're focused on May. I think if they do pull it off so that they have a full-time team for next year, it wouldn't shock me if they kind of launch next year by maybe coming in at Laguna Seca or, you know, a race or two at the end of our championship this year as they kind of, you know, prepare for and want everybody to anticipate full-time team in 20 if that happens. So I'm really optimistic. You're right, I was before. But I know a bit about the effort and the efforts that are going into it. And, you know, we'll see. I think they could end up with a team that could be a couple cars. I have much less kind of clarity around who the drivers would be. Doesn't follow that it would be Alonso, although I wouldn't rule that out. So we'll have to see. But, you know, it's just a great brand, a great brand in cars, a great brand in racing. It's got great lineage in Indy. And so we really hope they can join us.
For sure, for sure.
Awesome. Speaking of Alonso, I'm going to jump ahead to a question I had written down for later on, but one of the media on the ground in Texas, shout out to Aaron Moore again for helping us out and getting us some news. He spotted some Netflix cameras at the Alonso test in Texas last week. Do you know anything about that? I honestly don't know if you do, but if you do, any sort of insight would be awesome.
I really don't know what was in Texas. I know that I believe they are working on either the next Netflix series around Formula One or an extension of one, you know, that's available now. Yeah. So they're going to be involved in an ongoing way, is my understanding. But exactly what their vision is for what the content they produce will be and how they're going about producing it, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good documentary for those who haven't seen it. I did watch the Renault episode that Matt told me to watch. So I'm not completely done it yet, but definitely check it out to everybody listening who hasn't. So go ahead, Jess.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of now go to the more colorful racing questions just to get back.
No, I thought we were going to go to what kind of wine to go with the cheese, but okay, we'll go to racing.
I mean, maybe I'll come back around to the wine.
Okay,
so we want to know, obviously the 500 is pretty much everybody's favorite, so I'm going to eliminate that option as an answer. What, I guess, other race on the calendar this year would you call your favorite?
I really got to go with one.
Okay.
Let me answer broadly, like, and then if you make... Well, look, I love the start of the season. I mean, a lot of us live north, and when we get good weather in St. Pete and the way that town responds to our street race there, it's just a, you know, it's we skip spring and go to summer, and it's really energizing. We like everything about that event. I just feel like we got a great start. You know, Barber is, you know, you worry about rain, but when we get decent weather, people turn out. It's a great vibe there. It's a young crowd, and it's just a special place in terms of it being so green and so pretty. You've heard, I'm sure, everybody around me calls it our Augusta. And then there's, I don't mean to skip anything, COTA. We'll see how that grows, but we loved it. We loved being there. Austin as a town is cool. And we think we're going to connect and continue to grow there. And Long Beach is crazy, right? It's just that history, and it just feels like it keeps growing. It is a party and a smorgasbord of racing, all so many different series. So we're stoked, and by the time we get to May, after that, I guess I'd pretty quickly jump to Road America. It's such a cool track and such a cool place, and so many fans that slam the place for the weekend that really like their racing and they like to have fun. So I don't mean to pick, it's really hard to pick one, but I love the way we start. And then after we get through May, Road America is certainly a highlight. And we're really excited to see what's going to happen at Laguna Seca. That's such a special place that, you know, we hope for a great crowd, and we hope that it earns the spot of being the finale of the championship for a long time to come.
That's perfect. I love your passion for all of it.
It's such a treat to go race to race and you know, see what happens. There's so many have really very different character one from the other. And I think that's one of the, you know, I mean, off and on the track, but I think that's one of the great strengths and attractive elements of IndyCar racing.
I have to agree. All right, Matt, you're up.
All right. And I'm going to actually kind of piggyback a little bit off my McLaren question. When they released their livery, a lot of people, including us three, noticed that the main sponsor on the side pods there was some sort of tobacco sponsor. And then above it, there was a warning label about, you know, the use of nicotine can be addictive. And we're starting to see a trend. So McLaren also has another British tobacco sponsor. And then Ferrari has some sort of Philip Morris sponsor, Mission Winnow. Are we starting to see more of a trend of tobacco sponsors in IndyCar? Or do you have any insights about maybe a movement of seeing more of those types of sponsors back into racing?
Yeah, well, I think it's largely about e-cigarettes. So, yeah, they're tobacco companies, but it's really a different product, either from whatever you call them, traditional cigarettes and or smokeless tobacco. It's really about e-cigarettes, as far as I know. And so far, our regulations allow that, and something we'll continue to watch. But yeah, I think as far as I can understand, I don't really know the market data, but I know that there's interest on the part of more than one, and I'm not surprised to see them invest in the series.
Awesome. Awesome. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. First, I just wanted to comment, yes, being from the north, from Philly, and going to St. Pete in early March is fantastic to not have to bundle up for a couple days. But one thing I noticed at the track so far this year is how valuable NTT has been as a sponsor in terms of the upgraded looking booth they have on pit lane, but also the TVs that they have on the back of the booth has some really interesting timing and scoring data that I haven't seen in the past. So to you, you know, how valuable has NTT been so far, and are you happy with how everything's gone with them?
Yeah, well, so far so good. I think the onboarding of them as our title sponsor has been really seamless. I would credit the NTT leadership in Japan that made the decision. The NTT data folks in Texas that are leading the implementation, same folks who have been involved with Ganassi for, I think, since 2012. They love the series. They know what it is, and they know how to execute. And our own staff, I think, have done a really good job of, you know, we want to always under-promise and over-deliver to everybody, and that, not the least of which is our title sponsor. But I think it's just the beginning. It's not just rhetorical. They're very serious about finding ways to create, to define smart racing. You know, they have initiatives that are called Smart City, And it's all about taking massive amounts of data and making things better, operate better, traffic control and the rest. And this city context for racing, the truth is we're still trying to define what it means, but it's a very focused effort to think about all the things that technology could do for our sport. And because, you know, nobody has unlimited resources, we then have to make some cuts and decide what the priorities will be. But I think as long as we're engaged together, it'll be obvious what value they're adding in terms of technology. I should have also said in terms of I'd give the letter grade of an A so far. And part of justifying that is the creation of our app, which, you know, everybody takes everything for granted, but that didn't have to come on board and work and function well and look good on time, but it did. And we brought a lot of folks who had downgraded the prior app with us, which was great, and that was not something to be taken for granted. So I checked the box as a big win, the kind of seamless transition to the new, I think of it as the NTT IndyCar Series app.
Yeah.
So we're very pleased and expect more throughout the entire relationship because that's their orientation.
Yeah, I'd say the app is works fantastic and is definitely nicely laid out. Go ahead, Jess.
Okay, so I'm curious, how did you get to become a fan of racing to begin with?
Well, I was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. And everything else I'm going to say to answer that question is probably redundant. Because if you're born here and you got a pulse, you got to care about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I'm a little long in the tooth, but for me, AJ was the man. And the racing was unbelievable. And the parties were great. And most of my buddies figured out how to, you know, take part of race, the part of the parties that we were too young to take part in. And that was fun. so it was everything, you know, for young people who weren't necessarily what I think of today as a hardcore race fan, who didn't necessarily know what was going on technically through all those decades of innovation, you still wanted to be there just because it was the place to be. And it was so much fun. And so that's how I got into it. It was fun. It was May was a special thing in Indianapolis and it still is. And, it was fun to sneak in and be part of it as a kid. And now it's fun to have a hand in trying to pull it all together and have it grow and be that much more appealing to that many more people.
Yep, I've got a very similar story to that. I was also born and raised there, so I completely understand.
Yeah, well, was your first visit, did you go in by being in the trunk with a bunch of beer?
No, but that would have been a really good way to do it.
Yep, Mark wins this one.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, you're up.
Yeah, how do you top that? But yeah, side note, you guys do a great job, so we really appreciate your guys' efforts there. So kind of touching on the schedule and maybe kind of some future schedule notes, yourself, Jay Fry, Steven Starks, you guys all do a great job with the schedule and kind of going out and looking for venues and talking with folks, for example, Australia. And I kind of wanted to get your angle on what it's like when I wouldn't necessarily say like a third party, but as an example, when Ricardo Juncos goes to Argentina and kind of talks with officials there, are you guys keeping like a close tab on that? Are you guys working closely with Ricardo when it comes to Argentina? Is there any headway being made on that? Can you kind of elaborate there?
Yeah, well, specifically with respect to Argentina and Ricardo, he brought this idea to us. He connected us to folks that promote there that have a great track record, great facility. And yeah, we've met with them now a few times and there's regular communication directly. So Ricardo is somebody we have enormous respect for and we trust him. And, he, you know, he's not an agent in the sense that he wants to separate the two principles.
Right.
He wants to connect us and have us work together to figure out whether or not there's really a good opportunity. So he's how that got started. He's still part of it. He's in Argentina today, or at least on his way there today. And, you know, he's not just a intermediary. He's a connector, and we're very involved in face-to-face discussions with the folks down there as well.
Cool. So I appreciate your insight, because I honestly didn't know. So that's cool that, you know, if he came to you guys, that you guys are working closely. So it's awesome that he's not just kind of a mercenary per se. So we can get it over to Jess. Or sorry, Mike. Sorry. I'm going to keep doing it. It's just a habit.
It's fine. We switched up the order this week. Before I go into my question, I wanted to add a funny bit. Last summer, I met a girl who runs a podcast. I'm not going to give away the name, but she's based in Indianapolis. And so I asked her, do you know what the Indy 500 is? And she said, yes, I know, but I've never watched it and I've never gone before. And my heart sank. And I listened to the podcast every week it comes out. And I will never forgive her for that bit of disappointment.
Oh, well, I'm going to take it personally. Give me her name later.
Okay.
And a contact, and I'll ring her up and we'll see if we can fix that. You know,
I love it. I will do that.
Pulse. I'm sure she's got a pulse and she's a live human being. And so I think there'll be something in it for her to come out there and see what she's missing.
There you go.
Let's do it. We'll do some sort of combo podcast episode too, if we can get her out there.
Perfect.
So, you know, we've heard Jay Fry and I think you might have mentioned it and Barbara, kind of the 5-year plan. Over the maybe the next 5 years, what are some of your maybe wish list items you'd like to see accomplished as we go into the next decade here?
So Jay's focus is on the track and the competition when he talks about that. And the key element is the car, obviously. And I think the headline for the car over time is going to be gradually increasing. You know, we want it to be faster and louder. We want to be true to our roots. And we're going to be that kind of series. So how you get there is the detail of the plans. I think his expectation is that within a 5-year period, there will be a third OEM joining Chevy and Honda. And there's long lead times for that. It's something we work on all the time. And I really believe that we'll get it done. But you can't just control it. You can't just go there and say, okay, everybody, you know, we got to have a deal by March, or you probably don't have one. You have to work with the industry and individual interested companies to make something happen. And it's a focus. So a third OEM, a new car. A new car that is even more powerful, that provides even better racing if that's possible, is kind of the headline on the track. For the rest of it, we want to keep growing the fan base. The focus will be in North America and in the States in particular. And there's just so many things you have to do to make that happen, all of which we're working on. NBC, which we've talked about today, is part of that. And I think they're going to help us get to kind of a critical point where we'll not just continue to grow, but grow faster and have more promotion. The schedule matters. We think, again, we don't expect in the States to go beyond the middle of September, but we sure would like to start earlier. That could include a race or two internationally, even before St. Pete. And I think that's important. You can really sense, I can, that there is demand and opportunity outside the States. IndyCar is known. There's frustration at the moment with Formula One. And so I think we begin to be positioned to get more fans around the world, which is just growth. So an international expansion, but not forgetting our U.S. and North American base. Being very much on the edge, but not in front of the edge, the transitions from traditional linear media to digital will be important. And I think we can bring a lot more companies into the sport. And in the next 5 years, we should be able to get to see more consumer brands coming into the sport, which of course helps us reach more broader audiences. So those are some of the key elements.
I love it. Go ahead, Jess.
Okay, so I'm going to take it a little off racing again, just because my pets are sitting here staring at me. So we all are very much animal people here. We all have pets. They tend to make appearances in the show by, quote unquote, talking to us. So I want to know, do you have a spirit animal? And if you do, what is it and why?
Do I have a what animal? I didn't hear the word.
A spirit animal.
A spirit animal?
Yeah, an animal that just kind of embodies you.
Wow. Well, the puppy, she's now getting to be an old dog, but my real animal is Dixie, and she's a Springer Spaniel. She's a great dog. My spirit animal. I've never thought about that. It might be. So I spend a lot of time when I can outdoors in the field, and I don't want to go into the details of that, but some of that is included Africa. And when I think about the big cats, and particularly a male lion, I can't equate anything about me to that, but and they're the king of beasts, and they are. I could watch them forever. So if there's an animal that kind of moves you spiritually, I'd say it might be a lion. But he's not alone in that regard. There's a lot out there that is something. I don't know how much of that, any of that, has anything to do with me, though. So there you go. Best I can do.
Big cats are kind of my favorite, so I'm totally okay with that answer.
You gotta meet. I gotta hear more.
Yeah, no, I love big cats. They're fantastic. I live in Florida currently, and there's a lot of places to go see them down here. So, but anyways, Matt, it's up to you.
Well, then it's not as good as Kenya or.
No. One day I'm going to go see him out there. Yeah.
Well, that's your next trip.
Okay. So, we just had a race in Long Beach, not the most action-packed race. Definitely not the worst race I've ever seen. And, we get these people on social media, mainly maybe a NASCAR fan trying IndyCar for the first time or whatnot, and they're saying, we need stages. Where's the playoffs? Is there a playoff system? How does the championship work? If the race ends under yellow, we get the inevitable, why isn't there green, white checkers, things like that. Being in IndyCar and kind of at the helm there, do you guys ever consider doing any of those NASCAR-y type rules? Are you guys kind of like firmly against it? Where is your guys' kind of stance on all that?
We'd probably be pretty far over on the firmly against it side of the spectrum. I wish NASCAR the best. I hope they grow. Because we're going to grow and grow faster. But we think our racing's great. And we feel a bias toward our traditions in racing. And we wouldn't make really important changes in what I'd call the format of our racing unless we were completely convinced it really needed to be done. So our situation and theirs are different, and each needs to react accordingly. But there's really not. I wouldn't look for us to be having stages or racing and in races the way they do anytime soon. We're really quite happy with the way our races unfold now.
So I was being quiet that time to kind of give you your chance to give your answer, but I was clapping the entire time. So. I really appreciate that answer. That's very refreshing to hear, because I think a lot of us are kind of on the same page there. So to hear you say that brings me a tear of happiness for sure. So we appreciate that insight. I'm screwing this up too many times, so whichever you use next can go next.
So yes, this is one time we need that soundboard again so we can get the clapping back. I will, let me see here. I'm trying to find my question. Continuing on Matt's theme, we've heard some talk of a potential NASCAR, IndyCar type doubleheader. Is that something you guys are, in favor of or looking into?
So there's no active conversation that I know of about, to try to make that happen. If we could be ourselves and work with NASCAR on the same weekend and check a bunch of boxes I'm not really going to list for you today in terms of how we would be positioned and perceived and all that, and it worked for them too, maybe, but it's complicated. Both the series are set up as with our separate championships, and our need to be in different markets is different. Each of theirs and ours. So I think it's pretty much a long ball right now in terms of the odds. But it's not unimaginable. If we could find the right place where we're better, our series is better by racing there, and they felt the same way, and you can work out a whole lot of commercial points, and we thought it was going to be great for fans, then maybe. But it's not something we're losing sleep over. It's not something that's actively being worked on at this point.
Cool. Good insight there. I will flip it back to Jess.
Okay, so let's think outside of IndyCar for just a minute here. What would kind of bucket list race be that is not an IndyCar race that you would like to go and attend that maybe you haven't had a chance?
So not where would I like to take an IndyCar race, but what race would I like to see that I haven't seen?
Yes.
Well, it would probably be a Formula One race or maybe Le Mans. And if it was a Formula One race, it'd be like, Italy or even England. Those are classic tracks and classic events, and that'd be really cool. People say I should go to Goodwood. Maybe we'll be able to do that someday because it sounds like a real kick. But I think just to be at Monza or one of the truly classic Formula One events might be what I'd do.
I like it. All right, Matt, you're up.
So, in my opinion, you've had a very successful tenure in charge of IndyCar. I've seen a lot of stuff, done a lot of stuff, been to many races. While you've been in charge, is there one race that sticks out to you as being, a quote-unquote favorite or your most memorable or, for whatever reason, the one you've enjoyed the most? Is there one that stands out to you?
Well, the whole of the 100th running probably has to be the answer. It wasn't just what happened on the track, right? I mean, it was just such a huge potential opportunity and occasion for IndyCar fans and 500 fans. And so, you really sweat that. You really want it to be sensational. You don't want to disappoint. You sure don't want, all the negative scenarios that can happen anytime you have a big event like that. And as an event, it was just fabulous. I will never forget when we could come to the conclusion that we weren't going to sell any more tickets. We needed to declare it full, and we could tell people in Indy, it's full. It's going to be live on TV. That was one of those moments that was incredibly special. And then everybody there and the feeling of that place that day, and then to see this guy Rossi on fumes, crossing the finish line. It had to be the most sensational experience among the races I've experienced so far.
I was there. I'm pretty sure all three of us were there, but I was there super upset that Rossi won because I thought he had one foot out the door back to Formula One. But now, obviously, looking back on it, amazing win for an amazing driver who's definitely committed to IndyCar, which is awesome. And that whole race was so well put together and amazing, and the atmosphere was epic, and the pre-race stuff was epic. So my hat's off to you and everybody who put that on because it was definitely, definitely a special day. So hard to argue with your answer there. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm going to again piggyback off of Matt's question. You know, coming up to, I don't know, just a little over a month before the race, maybe five-ish weeks out, do you think we are expecting, you know, ticket-wise to be near sales are where last year, maybe a little bit more than that, or are we expecting a complete sellout?
So it's 40 days today.
There we go. Thank you.
So right now we're almost slightly ahead, but almost exactly on the number of tickets sold versus last year. Quite frankly, we raised the price on some of the tickets, not all of them, from 18 to 19. So for the organization, the revenue's up, and we didn't lose anybody in total anyway. So I think how much it goes up from here remains to be seen. You know, we've got an open test next week, and it'll for the real race fan, they'll see all the cars out there, and we'll start advertising more heavily throughout Indianapolis, Indiana, and the Midwest. We've got a new partner with Speedway Convenience Stores, and they're, I think, going to be very helpful in promoting it, getting us in front of more people. So, you know, I think we got a good shot at some growth. It'd be a stretch to project that it's going to be sold out. That was a pretty special tsunami that, you know, kind of don't feel that this year. But I expect, unless we just have 40 days of rain, that we will be equal to or a bit above where we ended up last year, which is great.
I love it. And it's a good thing that the track is not in Pennsylvania because I think it's rained for about 30 of the last 40 days here. So I will turn it over to Jess.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully it doesn't rain for the next 40 days. I don't want to even think about that. Anyways, so I'm going to stick with the theme of the 500. I want to know what your favorite pre-race tradition is.
So I'm going to give you two. One is, the second one is personal. The first one is for me true, but it's a shared experience with everybody. And that one is definitely back home again in Indiana. So, you know, for 15 years from 1990 through 2005, I was running men's professional tennis. And the French Open in Paris overlapped every one of those years. And every one of those years, I was in Paris. And I would get away from Roland Garros, the tennis stadium, get back to my hotel, find Indianapolis. And in those days, of course, it was Jim Nabors. When that happens, it's a pretty emotional moment and will always be that. So that's kind of that one. I'll tell you a fun a pre-race personal thing that I'm not sure I can. You have to tell me how clean I can be here, because there's a touch of this story that's a little off color. I'll try to find a way to say it without that. So my first race in this position with the Holman Company, at whatever time, maybe 5 a.m. in the morning, I'm making the rounds, seeing everybody, and I go to our officials meeting. And that meeting is run by a guy whose nickname is Rocket. And he runs all the, you know, the pit techs and all, everything official in the pits, on the track. And he comes up to me after the end of the formal meeting, and he says, "Hey, Mark, this is your first. Where are you going to be for the start of the race?" And I said, "I'm pretty sure I'm going to get up to race control, which is in the pagoda, and watch it from there." And he said, "Nah, you're coming with me." So I said, "Okay, Rocket, if I come with you, where are we going?" And he said, "The ditch." I kind of thought I knew what the ditch was, but I wasn't sure. But you can remember those photos of yesteryear where the way that a team communicated with a driver was their team member with the chalkboard standing out there at the track, basically in the ditch on the edge of the track. And if you get a chance to look at film or check it out this year, there's this ditch. And if I'm standing in it, the wall of the ditch, which is the level of the top of it is the level of the track, comes up to about my top of my thigh. So I kind of understood that's where he wanted me to go, and that's where he is for the start. So I say to him, well, Rocket, if I went with you for the start of the race and, you know, and we're in the ditch, do I need anything special? And I was thinking, you know, helmet, ear protection, fire suit, whatever. And he looks at me and he says, no, just cojones. I often tell that without the Spanish, because he said it in English. Of course, once he says that, I can't not do it.
I like it.
And so now, unless my nerve falters sometime in the future, my pre-race is to get out in the ditch for the start of the race, which is the most phenomenal experience imaginable. We get down near in the ditch near the pylon, and you know, so when they get the green, the first guys are racing flat out by the time they get to the starter stand, and everybody in the back's been, you know, is hauling. And so I think we're 400 yards or something like that past where the flag stand is, and they're full on racing by the time they get to us, and there's cars flying down at the ditch and flying up at the wall on the outside, and the cloud of dust, and this is all eye level. So it is a pretty phenomenal pre-race experience that our risk management people think is a really bad idea, but you know, so far so good.
Love it.
I am super jealous right now.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that would be amazing. So yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing. Go ahead, Matt.
It's everybody tonight. well, I mean, we're all talking about the Indy 500, so we can kind of dive into one thing. I kind of want to see if you have an opinion that you would like to share, and if you don't, you guys haven't, you know, Todd talked about it in the office yet. That's fine. I'm not trying to burn any bridges here or anything like that, but. Today, Tuesday, for our listeners listening this weekend and whatnot, Chip Ganassi came out and said that he was also in favor of protecting entries for some of the full-time drivers, which is an opinion Roger Penske had like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so I kind of wanted to know if you had an opinion on that, if you guys have been looking into that, if you guys are opposed to that, anything you're willing to share on that issue that's being talked about by at least two of the owners at the moment.
Yeah, so we've made our decision, at least for 2019. There's not going to be any guaranteed entrance into the field for the top 33 for anybody. We think it's very important that the Leader Circle teams get every consideration, but we think part of that event and its DNA is you got to qualify. So what we've done is shift the format a little bit for qualifying, because one of the ways that some of the team owners originally talked about it was a little different than just we should get in. It was it's pretty extreme if we really only have one shot at qualifying and we blow that, either because there's a technical problem or we put it in the wall, you know. It rains that day and there's not much of a shot for us to get back on the track and have a second opportunity to qualify. And so that's, you know, we're so behind the series, we're committed for the whole year. And if we have only one shot, that's really rough. So what we've done is responsive to that, but not only for leader circle teams, because it's also true for somebody like Pippa Mann or anybody else that's worked hard to put everything together just for me. And so on Saturday, this has all been announced, everybody will have to get out there and try to qualify. And we expect, weather permitting, we'll set the fast nine will be chosen as the nine. And they'll move ahead to Sunday. And then the last row will not be filled. So spots 31, 2, and 3 won't be filled from what happened Saturday. So if there are, say, 36 cars trying to get in the race, then six cars will be going again on Sunday morning to try to fill out the last row. And that ensures, again, subject to weather, that if a leader circle team, or for that matter, anybody else, doesn't get in the top 30 on the first day, Saturday, they'll have a second shot on Sunday. So we think that's going to be a really cool session. We think there'll be something like, who knows, maybe 36 or so cars trying to get in. So we think there will be a competitive bumping session, final bumping session really on Sunday. And then from that plus the fast nine going to determine who's going to be on the pole and the order for the first three rows will all be on NBC television Sunday afternoon. So I think that's going to be really cool. Sorry, Sunday early afternoon. And then there's going to be a full-on practice later Sunday. So like we've had on Mondays in the past, all the fans that are out there can see every car on the track tearing it up in race trim after qualifying.
I love it.
It's a little long answer, but the short answer was no, we weren't going to say if you're leader circle, you're in no matter what. But we were sympathetic to the idea that they only really could, it's conceivable they could only have one shot. And now with at least, I think, probably three additional teams trying to get in, more than we got slots for, it made sense to add this additional session on Sunday.
Perfect. I think that's a solid solution, and definitely maybe we'll give a guy like James Hinchcliffe a chance to try to get back in if something like that happens again this year. So definitely a good idea there. So, Mike, go ahead.
All right. Mark, first, just wanted to thank you for joining us this evening. Your time has been super valuable, and it's an honor to get to talk to you, and we look forward to seeing you at the track throughout the rest of the season. So we'll wrap it up with one more round of questions each here, and I'll change gears slightly from the Indy 500, but talk about the current year still. Through four races, we've had four winners from four different teams. And teams like Carlin Racing starting to show some improved results. Obviously, Harding Steinbrenner's won a race with Colton Herta. Does this help the series get more sponsors, maybe some extra TV ads? And is this something that engine manufacturers, maybe a third OEM, look at and go, all right, we need to get in because this is such a competitive time right now?
Yeah, I think it is just so competitive. You know, there's no margin for error as a team sets up to race on any given track. And we've seen, you know, the juggernaut teams kind of wipe out in qualifying and come back and be strong the next week. We've seen everything you just talked about. The youngest winner ever. Great stories. I think it's all just super. And it's all about the fact that it is so competitive. So many teams have a real chance to win and finish on the podium. So I think that's a great sales point. One way to think about this, I like to talk about is, you know, in our racing now this year in the UK is on Sky, and it's on the Formula One channel, as obviously are the Formula One races. And I don't mean to be biased, but I sort of summarize the fan reactions we've seen in social media after four races. I think it goes something like this. Well, I've been a Formula One fan all my life, and I expect I will always be a Formula One fan. I think it's the pinnacle of everything technical in racing. And I used to kind of think that maybe IndyCar was more like AAA ball, to use the American analogy. But man, I've been watching it now, and that racing is fantastic. That is so much fun to watch. So people are waking up to that. And it just creates so many stories and so much interesting racing, that whether it's additional teams, additional drivers, more audiences in the States and abroad watching, and or sponsors, I think it's the foundation for ongoing growth.
I love it. I will turn it over to Jess for her final question.
Yeah, I just want to thank you one more time for giving us your time this evening. We've really appreciated it. I'm going to go with, since you brought it up earlier, and we're having our cheese party, what kind of wine are we having with it?
What's going to be red? And, you know, I lived in France for a couple of years with my family, and I have to say, I like a lot of red wines from France. Bordeaux is kind of my favorite region, and Saint-Emilion would be my favorite French Bordeaux. But I also pay attention to California wines, and you know, you have to tell me what our budget is, but I like Cabernet Sauvignon, and I like Jordan, maybe is the one I visit most often. So we might have a Margaux or a Saint-Emilion, and we might have a Cabernet from California. With all that cheese, you know, we probably need at least a case.
I think we might need more than a case. That's a lot of cheese. All right. Thank you so much. And Matt, it's your turn.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mark. Your insights and honesty to some of these questions is amazing, and to kind of hear your take on a lot of stuff has truly been appreciated. And believe it or not, you know, we do have a hashtag for you. We might need to, I think, Jay, we've been group texting during this too. We might need to come up with a new one. But for the past, we kind of made one up on the fly called hashtag Go Mark Miles, because, you know, we've just been appreciating a lot of stuff you've been doing. And we also had Jim Aiello on at one point, and he referred to Jay Fry as this podcast's patron saint. And believe it or not, we also have a hashtag for Jay Fry, and it's hashtag in Jay Fry we trust. We love you guys and all the work that
which
you guys
is on
do.
A t-shirt as well.
Yeah, we got a t-shirt for that. We'll have to get a Mark Miles hashtag on a t-shirt too. But, you know, kind of touching on our patron saint, Jay Fry, what has IndyCar been like since he was brought aboard this, you know, the IndyCar train? And can you kind of touch on, you know, how good he's been for IndyCar?
Yeah, I can't say enough. First, just as a human being, it's a pleasure to work with. Everybody around him trusts him. They know, you know, what he says he means, and he's going to follow up. He's great with people, whether it's the receptionist in the office or Roger Penske or Tim Cindric or, you know, the CEO of NTT. He's incredibly responsive. He's just got all these great work habits. But that wouldn't be enough. What makes him truly amazing is his feeling for racing. And he has this ability to have a vision for what's most important. He's got great common sense, but he appreciates racing technically as well. And, you know, so he's the right guy to guide our future development, our future racing. And I'm just so glad he's there. I think it doesn't take a lot of work to go through the paddock and to know that he has the respect of everybody that's a competitor. And he knows a lot of our commercial partners as well, and the feeling is shared there. So he's a precious asset, and I'm really, really glad that he's there.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, we really appreciate him and everything that you guys all do together. So go ahead, Mike.
So that'll wrap it up. Mark, again, thank you very much. We appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you around the track during the month of May. But we will we'll let you get your evening back here, and best of luck with everything heading into May.
Well, it was a pleasure. I hope that you will grab me and say hello when we're all around together, and I'll look forward to that. Thanks for having me on.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye bye.
We will wrap it up here with a quick shout out to our newest patron, Patreon members. Thank you very much, Darcy Bretz. Thank you, Stephen Clark. And we'll do two of our other newest ones from last week, Lyndall McMurphy and Sean Crawford. So, and thank you to everybody who subscribes to Patreon. And thank you to everybody who listens every week. Hope you enjoyed this interview. I think it's already one of my favorites. And with that, I will let Jess sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.